Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Maria Garcia. We're going to spend the next bit talking about the latest crisis in the Catholic Church following a scathing grand jury report detailing decades of abuse of more than 1,000 children by hundreds of priests in Pennsylvania. The Pope this week issued a letter condemning sexual abuse and cover-ups by clergy. But some U.S. Catholics are going a step further. They've written a letter calling on all Catholic bishops in the U.S. to resign. The letter has more than 3,500 signatures as of this afternoon. And the plan is to submit it to the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops tomorrow at midnight. Listeners, we want to hear from you on this. Do you think U.S. Catholic bishops should resign? What does the Catholic Church need to do to redeem itself in your eyes? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. For now, though, we're going to speak to someone who signed the letter. But first, I should say we're going to speak to someone who signed the letter in a bit. But first, we turn to John Allen, editor of Crux Magazine, a Catholic news site. He's in Dublin, Ireland, where the Pope will visit this weekend for the Catholic World Meeting of Families. John, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Maria. Glad to be with you.
John, the Pope is expected to meet with survivors of sexual abuse. What are you hearing from people there?
Well, the Vatican confirmed today that that meeting will take place, and it was widely expected. There's no way in the world that a pope could come to Ireland, arguably the country, the single country in the world most scarred by the clerical sexual abuse crisis, and not meet with victims. What I'm hearing in the street, Maria, is that there are high expectations for the message on the sex abuse issue that Pope Francis is going to bring here. I must report that there is widespread dissatisfaction here, certainly, and I think it's fair to say elsewhere, among abuse survivors, their advocates, reformers in the church, with the content of the Pope's letter on Monday. I think certainly his very heartfelt understanding of the deep wounds left by abuse were appreciated, but there's a keen sense that the missing piece in that letter was a concrete action plan to fill the accountability gap in the church. What the Catholic Church now has is strong about accountability for clergy who abuse, up to and including cardinals. That was the case of now ex-cardinal Theodore McCarrick, who had to leave the College of Cardinals in disgrace because he was credibly accused of having abused a minor. Hmm. What it does not have is equally strong accountability for bishops who cover it up. Mm-hmm. And the Pope vowed those measures in his letter, but didn't say anything specifically about how that was going to be achieved. I think there is a wide expectation here that they want to hear something about that when he is in Ireland over the weekend.
And John, where does the news of the Pennsylvania report, which identified more than 300 priests who brutally abused more than 1,000 victims over seven decades, where does that fit into the global picture for the church?
Well, I think what it does is reinforce the understanding that any claim that this crisis is over or that there is light at the end of the tunnel is false. And the truth is, Maria, that, we have those numbers about those six dioceses in Pennsylvania because a grand jury took a microscope to that specific place. However, in the abstract, there is no reason to think that the problem of clerical sexual abuse was any worse in those six places in Pennsylvania than it was anyplace else. The great likelihood is that if you applied the same kind of microscope anyplace else in the world, you could get similar results. And I think what it had, that in tandem with the McCarrick scandals, the growing pressure on Cardinal Wuerl in Washington, who of course was named in that Pennsylvania report for his record when he was the Bishop of Pittsburgh from 98 to 2006, in tandem with the unfolding and horrifying clerical abuse scandal in the nation of Chile, ongoing revelations here in Ireland and elsewhere. I think that in tandem with the fact that the Pope is coming here, has created what many are talking about as a potential tipping point. And I think the reality is that Francis has a challenge in front of him when he is here in Ireland, either to respond to that effectively or not. And if he doesn't, I think the dissatisfaction could be enormous.
Okay. Cardinal Sean O'Malley from Boston apologized yesterday about another misstep. His office had mishandled a 2015 letter from a priest which contained serious allegations against Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, who you mentioned earlier. Is there a road back to winning trust and credibility after this?
Well, I think for Cardinal O'Malley personally, my reading would be that among survivors and reformers on this issue, Cardinal O'Malley still enjoys strong credibility. I mean, he's been seen as being on the side of the angels on this issue for a long time. I think perhaps the more vexing problem for Cardinal O'Malley at the moment is that over the weekend, the Archbishop of Dublin here, who of course will be the Pope's host, Archbishop Dermot Martin, essentially suggested that the Commission for the Protection of Minors that Cardinal O'Malley leads in the Vatican, which is the Pope's chief advisory issue on the body on the sex abuse issue, essentially that it's been a failure, that it has not, in Archbishop Martin's words, it has not sunk its teeth in where it needs to, and the Pope needs a stronger team. I think that is something that that Cardinal O'Malley is going to have to address going forward.
John, you had mentioned earlier that this situation is reaching a tipping point. A tipping point to what, you think?
Well, look, my read would be that there are a lot of ordinary, faithful, mass-going Catholics out there who have stuck with the Church over the last two decades. Because remember, these scandals erupted in the States in 2002, 2003 in Boston and then rippled out across the country. They've stuck with it because they believed the assurances they were given that the Church leadership today understands the failures of the past and is taking steps to make sure they don't happen again. Yet here we are two decades later, apparently still dealing with the same accountability gap. A lot of those folks are telling me they're not sure how much longer they can stick it out. And so, when I talk about a tipping point, I mean that the problem for the Church may no longer be largely external in terms of the media and lawsuits and the political climate. It may also be internal. In terms of some of its most faithful members, simply not being willing any longer to tolerate the status quo.
Okay. John, thank you so much for joining us from Dublin, Ireland. We appreciate you being back on Radio Boston.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Let's turn now to someone who has signed the letter calling on all Catholic bishops in the U.S. to resign. Bill Mitchell is a member of the Pastoral Council of the Paulus Center, and he joins me now in the studio. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Maria. Thanks for having me.
Of course, I want to go back to what John was saying. He's saying this now looks like an internal problem. I know I read one of your articles today where you mentioned that a pastor had mentioned to you that he understood if some of the faithful Catholics wanted to take communion at another congregation, perhaps a Methodist congregation, a Lutheran congregation. And he said, follow your conscience and seek Jesus in the path that best suits you after these revelations. Did that tempt you?
It, as I mentioned in the piece, that has tempted me in the past. That was Father Mike McGarry, who's the director at the Paulus Center. He made that comment among listing a number of possible steps that Catholics are certainly considering in the wake of most recent developments. I think in the end, that's not a step that I want to take. I think I'd rather stay and fight.
Mm-hmm. I do want to take some calls now. Remember, we are taking your calls. We want to know what you think. Do you think all U.S. Catholic bishops should resign? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's go to Pat from Watertown.
Thank you for taking my call. I certainly understand the impulse to throw all the bums out, and I absolutely, share it on some level. My question is this. I have family who have worked, who have actually trained seminarians in the Church in years past, and what we've seen in the past 20 years is the folks who choose to be ordained, and there's many fewer of them in years past, so folks that would be coming into leadership if this generation left tend to be even more conservative. They tend to be attracted to John Paul and the former Pope Benedict much more than a more reform-minded point of view. What's to say that if, by some strange chance, there was a mass resignation of bishops, what replaced them would be any better?
So, Bill,
other structural changes. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Bill, I'd like you to respond to Pat's question. I mean, what this is a massive change. So you lose 400-plus bishops. That's a huge structural change. What happens then if you don't like the people who replace them?
As a practical matter, that is not going to happen. What the letter calls for is for these 456 active and retired bishops to submit their resignation to the Pope, to whom they are only answerable, as a recognition that they have failed to do their jobs, especially in the last 16 years. The Pope is certainly not going to accept all of those resignations. Hopefully he would accept some if they're ever offered. But this is really a first step that seems like a very modest first step for people who have failed to deliver on what they've promised to do in their jobs could do in terms of beginning to make amends to the people they serve.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is precedent here. 36 Chilean bishops offered their resignation to the Pope. The Pope only accepted 5 of those. Moving on, would you have felt differently about signing the letter had the Pope issued his statement beforehand?
No. There was nothing in the Pope's statement, as John pointed out, that addressed any of what will actually be set up to address this problem systemically. And that remains the problem. The bishops are going to meet as a group in November to consider various possibilities, but I'm not holding my breath. I think the practical solution beyond this modest step that they might take with resignations, that the real solution lies outside their ranks. Mm. It might be in the courts. It's been shown to be in newsrooms. So I'm not looking for the bishops to solve this problem, frankly.
Mm. Let's go to the phone lines now. We have Kathy on the line.
Hello.
Hi, Kathy. You're on the line.
Okay. I think it would be not appropriate for all the bishops to resign because all the bishops are not guilty. But the ones who can be found to be guilty of this should not only be defrocked, but they should they and the priests who committed it should have to satisfy municipal and state laws. They should, it's crime. They should be put in jail. This appalled me many years ago when I first heard about the pedophilia, and I wondered why they weren't accountable to regular law. And I also decided that the church is very important to me, and the word of Christ is very important to me, and how the rituals help me understand that is important to me. And I am not letting men screw up my religion. They're flawed men. The whole religion isn't screwed up, just these flawed men. So let's put them in jail.
Kathy, thank you very much. Kathy's words, similar to yours, you're saying, I am a faithful Catholic. I'm not letting this scandal take that away from me, but I want change.
I'm with you, Kathy. As we walked away from this listening center at the session at the Paula Center the other night, my wife said to me that I'm just too stubborn, she said. I'm not going to let them take my church away from me, just as you framed it, Kathy. The church is the body of Christ. That's all of us. The bishops are a part of it, a relatively small part, despite their exalted status.
Mm. I want to bring in another voice here. With us on the line is Thomas H. Groom. He's a professor of theology and religious education at Boston College. Welcome, Professor Groom.
Thank you, Maria. Happy to be with you. Fascinating conversation so far.
I'm glad you're joining us.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about this. So we heard from Marie Collins. She was the first abuse survivor who served on the Papal Commission that was looking into sexual abuse. She says that commission had recommended an accountability tribunal that would mean that any bishop who was negligent or protected an abuser would have to go to this before this tribunal, I should say. But she says that another office in the Vatican, essentially the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, refused to implement that suggestion even after it was approved by the Pope. So there is a roadmap. There is a way to get systemic and structural changes for accountability in place here. But
you can see why people say or why they're concerned that the Catholic Church hasn't taken these steps.
Well, and it has not taken these steps, but I think the hope, Maria, is that maybe it's going to take them now. Now, maybe I'm naive to say that, but I do think that the Chile experience was a turning point for Pope Francis. I think he really wasn't taking it as seriously as he should have been, but his defense of Barros, and then he's realizing that he was terribly wrong about that, and he's coming out and saying, I made a dreadful mistake, please forgive me, which was a very healthy thing to have a pope to do, if we don't often see that happening, God knows, throughout the past 2,000 years or so. But he's coming forward with this letter now, I think, could be a tipping point toward real reform and renewal. And I have a number of reasons for saying that. And, of course, the real reform will come when these tribunals are put in place. John Allen's point that the Dallas Charter of 2002, well, was progress. It was an attempt to hold priests accountable. But what it didn't, or whoever was the perpetrators of this dreadful crime, but it didn't hold their supervisors, their bishops accountable. And the bishops got away with covering up and moving people around and so on, and were never held accountable, nor was their action in any way transparent. It was all behind closed doors. So I think the next move is to put in place a real tribunal system, and I don't think one at the Vatican is enough. I think we want one in every country, maybe even one in every Episcopal region. A tribunal and significantly constituted, or with a significant proportion of a kind, made up of lay people, because in a sense we've lost confidence in our bishops, which is unfortunate, but they're not perceived as capable of policing themselves. Mm-hmm. So if these tribunals are put in place, which I think is the next imperative step in addressing this dreadful crisis, then I think we'll be well on our way. Now, one of the hopeful signs in Pope Francis's letter was that he turned repeatedly to the roadblock, to the tragedy, to the cancer, as he often calls it, of clericalism. Now, this is a very difficult thing to define, but it really has many aspects, the clericalism of Catholic clergy.
Professor Groom, I want to interrupt you here because I want to make sure that we get to a lot of points. A lot of people are listening who are invested in this conversation. Speaking about the Dallas Charter that you mentioned, you know, it does appear to have been effective in stopping some abuse in the U.S. So there are questions about why the Catholic Church hasn't implemented the same policy in any other country. And so I know that you are optimistic about the Pope's message yesterday, but ultimately I think there are Catholics around the world saying there are precedents, there are roadmaps to ensure accountability, and we don't understand why there doesn't seem to be the will to implement them within the Vatican.
Well, you know, and hopefully Pope Francis can still act as Pope, even though there's resistance in something like the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, that he can overrule such resistance and root out such resistance and remove the people who are resisting. I mean, heads will have to roll, but hopefully he's ready to do that at this point in time.
Okay. I want to take more calls. Mark is on the line. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you. Thanks for calling. What's your comment or your question?
Well, I think that the last speaker just nailed it in that the problem is a lack of desire below, at levels below the Pope to actually get something done. I look at the church, and by that I mean the organization of the church, as any other large multinational corporation requires a tremendous amount of money to run. And if that money is withheld, then there will be changes. And I would say no, don't have the bishops resign, but the congregants should stop paying.
Okay.
And then when a cardinal suddenly finds that there is no income, then we'll see some movement. But not until the organization will do whatever it takes to protect itself.
Okay, thank you very much, Mark, for your phone call. Bill, would you stop financially supporting your parish?
Mark, I would push back on that, because the reason I give to the Paula Center every week has nothing to do with the Vatican and certainly nothing to do with the bishops. It has everything to do with the Wednesday night supper club that we've been doing, feeding people who are homeless on the common for the last 50 years, for helping kids learn about the faith, for bringing new people into the church. I think the last thing we want to do is erode the power for good that the church represents, especially at the local level.
Bill, at the local level, that may be true, but on a global level, I mean, the Catholic Church is one of the most powerful financial institutions in the world.
But I don't think the way to get that under control is financially. I think it has much more to do with legal maneuvers, with legislation in various countries, and with the power of the press. I think if you look at what happened with the National Catholic Reporter in the 80s and the Globe in 2002, there is enormous power to put the spotlight, if you will, on these abuses and to rule them out.
Okay, let's take one last phone call. Peter from Warren. Hi, Peter.
Hello. I just had only two things. One is that the Catholic Church has been around for a long time, and these policies, and I won't say policies, but these behaviors have been really unhealthy things that have gone on for centuries. And I think the thing that really also has to be brought into it is patience with the Pope, with the people. And I realize that that's a terribly hard thing to say to people who've suffered so immediately.
Okay.
But it seems to me there's just no instantaneous solution. This is going to be a theological and emotional and faith-oriented process.
Thanks so much, Peter from Warren, for your phone call. We appreciate it. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Maria Garcia, and this is Radio Boston.